Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast. Yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Saturday, December 30th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 255. I have a super special return guest, Aisha Harris, host of Slate Represent. Super excited to have her back on. She's terrific. And I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I'm sitting in my apartment. I've got the TV on mute. The PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. The Washington Huskies versus the Penn State Nittany Lions. It's a bunch of young guys playing their hearts out for no money. A big bowl game. Guy just got cracked in the head after dropping a misreading a punt return, and he just got cracked in the head. And that kid's not getting paid for this. He's probably going to get a – will he even get a PlayStation 4? Will they even give him a video game? Are they going to give him Star Wars Battlefront that they've been hawking the whole time? God, he got cracked. No, he's probably not going to get that. If he did get that, then he'd probably lose his eligibility and have to work at Enterprise. Not that working at Enterprise is a bad thing. I've gotten 3 or 4 vehicles from Enterprise, and they're a good organization. They're like, you know, used vehicles that you buy. Anyway, let me get off my soapbox. Those kids aren't getting paid, but, you know, Jennifer Garner is doing a commercial, probably a Capital One commercial, and like, oh, what's in your wallet? And I'm getting paid none of these. All right. Off my soapbox, I'm sitting here in my apartment chilling. It's a snowy day today. This is a really snowy day up here in northern New Jersey. I haven't done much of anything. It's like almost 4:30. I'm about to do an indie movie corner. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, be on the lookout for a new indie movie corner with Jeff Cerulli and me talking about some stuff. But other than that, haven't done much of anything. You know you're lazy when you're too lazy to play video games. I've got 5 hours to knock off in Uncharted 4. I have yet to finish that game. I'm probably going to clean the snow off my car. Because if I don't do that, it's probably going to be frozen tomorrow. And it's super cold outside. And I have a show to do tomorrow night in New Paltz, New York. Near New Paltz. Anyway, so I'm thinking I'm going to do that and go get some ginger ale. I've been fiending for some ginger ale really bad, for some Canada Dry, ladies. Don't know why. Sorry, guys. So I hope everybody had a terrific Christmas, and I hope you're happy, your New Year's happy and all that good stuff. Don't party too much. Party safely. Party wisely. Don't stand out in the cold to watch a ball drop. Don't do that. What are you, rookies? Be a veteran. Be a veteran with some friends. Have some drinks or whatever type of libations you choose to have. Maybe some ice cold Canada Dry. I'm not saying that this show is sponsored by Canada Dry. It's not. But if it was, you know, I'm saying it like it is, but I'm not. I'm speaking it into existence. That's what I'm doing. So I hope everybody, I had a good one. I went down to Maryland, saw my parents. I got an oil change. What else did I do while I was down there? I went to the Black Wegmans. in Atlanta, Maryland. It's so funny how it's the Woodmore Town Center, and center spelled with C-E-N-T-R-E, like it's like they're being elitist. And I call it the Black Wegmans, one, because it's in PG County. Two, because they have specialized chicken wings that they don't have at the one near me in Montvale, New Jersey. The Montvale, New Jersey, they have your buffalo wings, and barbecue wings and all that good stuff. And it's good. They're good chicken wings from that you can get from their hot bar. But this one, I went in there to get some, like a couple things. Me and my dad went to the store. He stayed in the car, and I went in there and braved the elements of a grocery store on Christmas Eve. Actually, Christmas Eve, it was more intense. It's more intense on Thanksgiving, like the day before Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving was less intense than Christmas, which I thought that would be flip-flop. But anyway, I go in there, and I'm just checking out the store and getting some stuff, and I'm in the wing section looking at the wings. We were getting some wings for the night, and I was like, oh, wow. And I can tell that this is a Black Wegmans because they have specialized chicken wings, like I said. They had lemon pepper chicken wings, and they were chef's creation. Like, you know how, like, the that chef was probably a fan of Atlanta on FX, the Donald Glover show. He was probably a fan with that lemon pepper chicken, and it was just specifically that lemon pepper. And to top it all off, they had Old Bay chicken wings, and I was like, I gotta try an Old Bay. So I got some of those, and me and my parents had that. It was good chicken wings from the Black Wegmans. And I will say, because I talked about this like this past summer, where that had to be like, I mean, it was a lot of Black people at that Wegmans. It's in PG County, but it was awesome. And I like those Old Bay and lemon pepper wings. What else to do? That's kind of all that I did. I mean, I didn't really do too much. I mean, I had a show a couple weeks ago. I know it's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without a dope podcast to step to. But I needed a break. I needed to take some time off. What are you going to do? I did a show at Lucy's Lounge on the 20th. That was fun. Shout out to Frank Pellegrino and the Noma comedy crew. That was fun. I was only supposed to do a half hour. I did 40. I gifted them 10 minutes. And I had a good time. It was a nice crowd. And just rocked out with them, had a good time, just talked to them, told them my story, you know, you guys. That's what I did. And then it was a long day for me. It was a pretty long day. And I was up like at 4 o'clock that morning, went to work. After work, I had to go to the movies. I had to go see Jumanji in 3D. I went to see Jumanji to kill time. And Jumanji was fun. I recommend it. It was a real good. It was really fun, like a fun, big budget blockbuster movie. The Rock was funny. Kevin Hart was funny. The cast was good. Jack Black, I guess he might have been. He stole a bunch of scenes. Everybody's saying like he was one of the standouts, and I would say that he had an interesting, fun role. And I had gotten 2 movie passes from Christmas, the office Christmas party, my departmental Christmas party at work. And so I got 2 passes. And so I was excited about that. We do like a secret white elephant Santa where you have pick a number and then you get a gift. And then somebody can steal it. Then they steal your gift like 2 or 3 times or something. People fight. And at an office Christmas party, the best thing to do, your limit's only, it's up to $25. And you get liquor. And that's always, that's always the safest bet, to get liquor. The coworkers were fighting over it, and that was kind of fun. And I got the movie ticket, so I was excited. So I went to see Jumanji. It was fun. And I went to do the show. It was really late. I went to get something to eat. And then I'm pulling up to my apartment complex, and I drive up. And I get a good parking spot, and I get out of my car. I'm about to eat some McDonald's, fat boy. And then I go, and then this woman pulls up in a van. And it's a woman, and she's just a Black woman. She says, excuse me, I know this is kind of an awkward question, but I couldn't get into that parking spot on the street, and I was just kind of like wondering if you could just give me your spot and try to park. I was like, and before I give you my answer, look, I told you I've been up since 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was work up all day. It was a long night. It was about 11 o'clock at night at this point. And so it was a Thursday night. So Friday, if you can't find parking in within the complex, you can park on the street. But then there's street parking, like there's like street sweeping and stuff. And if your car is on that part of the road, you can get towed, you can get ticketed. And I'm not risking that. And I just told the lady, I was like, look, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I kind of felt like a dick, but at the same time, why would you ask a question like that? Like, really? Would you do? Am I an asshole for that? I really don't think I am, but that's what happened. And so it goes. Hope she had happy holidays. You're a mean one, Mr. Chris. So that was that. So let's get to Aisha Harris. Aisha and I recorded this episode a couple of weeks ago. I think it was like December 16th. And I mainly had her on to discuss the Disaster Artist. This was going to be an indie movie corner, but the discussion kind of evolved before we got to talking about the Disaster Artist, which we did. And we just had a really good conversation about the climate of Hollywood. We talked about, you know, as far as sexual harassment is concerned. And at that time, there was some interesting stuff that developed, and we talked about that. And then we got into the Disaster Artist. So as many times as I can get I can get Aisha on, I'll try to have her on, because I really enjoy her perspective, and I'll try to reach out to her to talk award stuff once the Oscars and Golden Globe stuff solidify. So once we get the Oscar noms, and maybe after the Golden Globes, we'll reach out to her and have her on, maybe on a special Patreon edition. So with that being said, I think that's all you needed to know before we started. So let's just, why don't you just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with the very lovely and talented Aisha Harris. So Aisha, it's great to have you back on the show. I thought about you this week when I was at the liquor store, and I saw the tiny liquor bottles, the shooters, as you call them.
And, yeah.
And I think maybe I want to try that sometime.
Yeah, you mean bring it onto the movie theater?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I just did that last night, actually, when they went to go see Last Jedi.
Oh. Okay. What'd you think about that?
Oh. I think I'm gonna go out there and say that this is the best Star Wars movie ever.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, blasphemy, but one of my colleagues, Sam Adams, he said that he thought it was really good, not just for a Star Wars movie, but like as a movie. And I completely agree. Like, it's the first one that I feel like really stands on its own outside of all of the lore and the legend. Like, it was just fun and entertaining and thoughtful, and the action sequences were just really great. Like, I loved every part of it. So
I really enjoyed it too. I dug it a lot. I went to see it opening night, and I did a show. I'd been up since like maybe 4 o'clock that morning, Thursday morning, and then I fell asleep during a chunk of the movie.
Oh no!
Yeah, so I was, because I said, okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna watch this movie because I was excited. I didn't want any spoilers. And so I had already bought a ticket for Friday after I got off work. So I was like, okay, I'm going to keep this ticket and I'm going to go see it. And Aisha, it was a whole nother movie. I was like, oh, they went to another land that had a casino. I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I really did enjoy it. I don't know. You're not the first person to put it up there as one of the best. But I really did enjoy it on second viewing when I was awake the whole time. So I really dug it. What else have you been interested in this award season, as far as just give like a brief overview of what you've liked this year so far? and what you think has potential to do well during award season?
Oh, man. I mean, so this is also really fresh in my mind because I also saw this just yesterday, but I finally got a chance to check out BPM, the French movie, or not the French movie, but it is a French movie about the about political activism of the ACT UP fight AIDS movement in France. And it is one of, first of all, I probably put it in like maybe my top three or five of this year. It's just so beautifully made. It's also one of the best like dramatic depictions I've seen of activism ever. Like, activism is really hard to depict in a dramatic way without getting to either, you know, you don't, often I feel like we see one side of it and we don't see the other sides or how complicated it is. I think Selma also did a really good job of showing the complexities of this one, I think, does as well. Just the not the infighting per se, although there are some fights, but like the tensions between people who are all trying to work towards the same goal and the different ways of the different methods they use of getting towards the same goal. And it really like boils it down and just see them, a lot of like a whole chunk of the movie is just spent in this room where they meet weekly and they have these discussions about things. And then there's also like a really tender, beautiful love story in it as well. So I have a feeling that is probably going to do well as like a foreign language Oscar nominee. I can totally see that happening. I'm still pulling for Get Out. I want Get Out to win Best Picture. I think it should win Best Picture.
You know it's not, right?
I know, but look, if Moonlight could win, and Moonlight winning, I think is still, I think now that it's in hindsight, we take it for granted. But I think that the fact that Moonlight won, a movie in which not a single white person appears on screen and says a line, like there's no white person speaks a single line in Moonlight. The fact that that won Best Picture, I'm still astounded that that happened.
I'm amazed too, but it's almost like because I'm such a, just trying to remove myself from being a Barry Jenkins stan since Medicine for Melancholy, and I kind of felt like that because a lot of people now are saying, "Oh, it wasn't that good. It wasn't all that." You know, people are having this like, I don't know what you call it. Like they're just like, they're trying to come up with like some way to say it wasn't that good. I don't know. I'm trying to find that term and I'm blanking right now, but that's like, it's one of those movies that maybe everybody didn't like as much, but that wouldn't be the first movie. Moonlight wouldn't be the first movie that had that didn't have universal acclaim. Part of me feels like it would be nice to see Get Out do well. I really liked it. Yeah, it would be nice, but no love from the Golden Globes as far as did it get best?
It got best comedy. It was a nominee for best comedy, but Peele did not get a director nomination. I mean, the Globes they're not they do their own thing. It's sort of a predictor, but it's sort of not. So I'm not too worried, but we shall see. I mean, I think also I saw the post, and I think that also has a pretty good chance, especially in this cultural moment of our president attacking journalism. That movie feels like it'll definitely appeal to a certain sector of Hollywood and the Academy. I feel like the last third of it gets a little too Spielberg-y and lots of just grandstanding characters talking about how awesome the free press is, which, look, I am a member of the free press. I get it. And I love Spielberg, but sometimes it's like too much Spielberg. Mm-hmm. That kind of happens in the last third. I think that has a pretty good shot as well of getting in there as one of the nominees for Best Picture. And I'm hoping for Tiffany Haddish. I feel like that is a long shot for Best Supporting Actress in Girl Strip.
Yeah, it is.
We shall see. She did not get it a nom from SAG, so that's not promising, but who knows?
It's always so hard for comedies to get that recognition. And I think it would, this Girls Trip will just have to be looked at as that breakout performance and not the same as Melissa McCarthy's performance in Bridesmaids. But I think what's going to happen for Tiffany Haddish, like, she's already a star, and now she's going to probably move on to eventually, she's going to be in a lot of stuff. She's eventually going to move in and do things that are probably going to be, have more critical weight as far as the quote unquote serious, award film. So she'll get her shot. It's not the last we'll hear from her. It just seems like, I don't know if you noticed this, but to me the most interesting races during this award season, the quote unquote competition, is the female categories. I feel like it's kind of stockpiled. With a lot of really good performance. I feel like Frances McDormand is like the runaway for me. But I have not seen Molly's Game yet.
Molly's Game, Jessica Chastain is very good in Molly's Game.
And I felt like she got kind of pushed to the wayside last year with the film that she did. It was another Miss Sloan. And then that movie had another great performance from Gugu Mbatha-Raw. So it's just so stockpiled. And I think maybe in the Best Supporting Actress category, I mean, who else do you know besides maybe Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird? I mean, that was pretty strong. I can't think of, I'm typing now to see what I can find on the noms for that.
It seems like they're really pushing for Mary J. Blige for some reason.
For Mudbound?
And look, I liked Mudbound. I thought she was actually very good in Mudbound. Mm-hmm. But I would not put her in, like, the top five of supporting actress performances by any means this year.
You wrote a great measured review of that film where it felt like, oh, God, another one of these stories. But it's like, but then as an actor, I would probably do it if I got cast, but it's just like, speak on that film a little bit, just to share your thoughts with, I advise people to go check out your review of it on Slate, but just maybe speak to it a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's based off of a novel, written by, now I don't remember her name.
Let me see if I can. We'll find it.
Yeah.
No. Dead air. Well, that's a weird. I didn't even get.
Hilla Jordan.
Okay.
That's it. Found it. So it's based off of a novel of the same name written by Hilary Jordan. Okay. Hilary Jordan is actually a white woman. I haven't read the book, but my problem, I think, had more to do with the source material, what I know of the source material, than anything that Dee Rees did. And maybe this is me. I'm a stan for Dee Rees in the same way you're a stan for Barry Jenkins. And I'm also a stan for Barry Jenkins. But, like, I was just so happy to see her have this freedom to make a story that is set. It's set in two different, one part of this movie is set in Mississippi, and then the other part of it is set during World War II, but it's also set at war abroad. And it tells the story of two families, one white, one black. The black family has been sharecropping on this land for decades, and the family members before them, and then this white family comes and they take over the property from the previous owners, and it's about all the tension that occurs between their families. And I don't know, I was really with it until the last third of the movie, where it kind of turned, as I mentioned in my review, it almost turned into a Detroit situation, where it felt sort of like torture porn, but it wasn't quite there yet, because I think that Dee Rees, it's a credit to her direction, in the way that it doesn't feel as gross as Detroit does. It just feels kind of like, again, why? So yeah, those were my issues with Mudbound, but I think it's a really, it's beautifully made and shot. A cinematographer is Rachel Morrison, and her, like, it's just really, really beautiful. She also did, she's done Fruitvale Station and Cake, Rachel Morrison. Okay. It's on Netflix, so I advise people to see it. And
especially from a technical standpoint, because that's why I kind of didn't want to go too hard on it, because Dee Reese did Bessie, and to me, her best to date is Pariah. Just such a powerful, heartbreaking film that's just incredible. And so it's just the way that she, okay, now you give a independent filmmaker more money and she makes a terrific film, where war is film. Like, it's like war isn't always easy to film, and she handled it like a pro. Like, she just, the execution was, to me, was looked flawless.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, I'm just like, now let's see what else she gets. Like, she should be getting mm-hmm. more opportunities for this one.
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that aspect, and just hope she's just somebody that's in the system, you know, and just and can put out some cool shit. Was anything else you wanted to touch on with Golden Globes, or other things you liked, things you folks that you thought should have got nommed? The Big Sick, the Big Sick didn't get anything, did they, for Golden Globes?
No. I mean, that's a travesty. I feel. I really enjoyed it. I think that there's a lot of familiarity to the story, but I think the way, because it's a rom-com, it's working within those genres.
Right.
And you know, we're also seeing more and more, you know, children of immigrant stories, thankfully. So it's familiar, but I also think it's bringing something new to the table. The fact that, like, part of the whole part of the main part of the movie is that this girl, this woman, is in a coma, and like this woman he was like starting to date but sort of wasn't, and then they broke up, but it's not clear. I just think it's really smart and funny, and the casting, the ensemble is great. Every character in that movie works, and you know, that's not always the case in some movies. So
yeah. Well, another thing I wanted, before we get into our review of The Disaster Artist, I couldn't have you on and not talk about the Harvey Weinstein situation as its ongoing evolution, where Salma Hayek released a story. We're recording this on Saturday, December 16th, maybe a couple days ago. She put out her story, her Harvey Weinstein story, in the New York Times. Did you get a chance to check that out at all?
Oh, I did. Yeah. I read it. Her allegations, and I'm just saying allegations because mm-hmm. you know, sure. we have to. her op-ed, though, was very much like, I didn't think it was possible to be more grossed out by Harvey Weinstein mm-hmm. because there's been so many details, but like now I am even more so. Yeah. It's just the way in which he details the manipulation. Him stipulating that she had to do a lesbian sex scene, or like a sex scene with another woman, in order to get her movie made. And it just speaks to a lot of things that are still not being as talked about as much. She talks about how her being a Mexican actress made it especially hard and put her in this position of, you know, being exceptionally vulnerable. And, feeling like she had to prove herself because she was Mexican and because she was a woman. And the fact that, you know, she was, it was just really dispiriting. And I find it very interesting that so far the only formal, I mean, Harvey Weinstein has denied all of the accusations against him. You know, he said these things didn't happen the way they said they happened. Nothing was non-consensual. But the only, to my understanding, the only times he's actually responded directly to a formal or formally via his press people or his publicist mm-hmm. or his lawyer, were when Lupita Nyong'o did her op-ed and when yep. Salma Hayek done their op-ed. They are both women of color.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, what's the coincidence between them?
Yeah, they are the two women of color who have come forward. I mean, there's been a couple of others who were lesser, at least to American audiences, lesser known, who have mm-hmm. come out. But these were the highest profile women of color who have come out against him. And he's only responded directly to those. And I was already wondering, like, you know, what's going on here? Why are, this speaks to how women of color... Obviously, I don't want them to be getting harassed, but like it also says, like, who's allowed to, who gets to the point where they're meeting with Harvey Weinstein? And it's usually white women. Right. And that speaks to a whole thing about women of color not having the same access, the same opportunities in Hollywood as white women, as their white counterparts do. And then, of course, he responds to them. And I think in many ways, that is a very obvious rebuke to... It's basically shutting down a woman of color's voice. And we see it all the time in Hollywood. We see it all the time everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was just very disheartening. So his responses and his denial of what both Selma Hayek and Lupita Nyong'o had to say, I just couldn't help but notice that. Many of us have noticed that. It's interesting.
Yeah, because I talked about it last week when Gabrielle Union said, I guess, doing press for her memoir or just her new book that she has out, was saying that the people, women, white women, it's a watershed moment almost just for white women exclusively. When their cries are when they cry out, then people seem to be responding, but not so much for black women. It's just like that intersectionality when it comes to feminism, something that I've been kind of a little more hip to. And now that this Selma Hayek thing came out, it baffled me because obviously it's wrong, but then the way Selma Hayek kind of treated Jessica Williams at Sundance in what was that, like January, February?
Yeah,
and it was just like, I mean, your thoughts on that? Because it kind of, I don't know why it seemed like she was kind of being silenced in a way. Did you feel mm-hmm. that? What are your thoughts on that? And the peril? I don't know. Say something really cool and smart about that, Aisha.
I mean, just for context, this happened. I think it was at Sundance where a bunch of women, high profile women in Hollywood and I think a couple of other industries met together for like a brunch where they were going to talk about the difficulties of being a woman in Hollywood, mm-hmm. Which is great. That's a great thing to do. But then, you know, some women like Jessica Williams, women of color, dared to suggest that, you know, their things are not the same for women of color, that they have things even worse sometimes than white women do. And Salma Hayek kind of had the old school Cosby thing going on where it's like, you just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, like don't complain. Now, look, there's something, I believe what Salma Hayek said in her op-ed, the accusation she made, I believe them. Mm-hmm. And I feel terribly for her. But yeah, at the same time, it is sort of like, well, you can be a victim, and you can also, in many ways, be ignorant to the ways in which you can sometimes contribute to it's not the same issue. Like Salma Hayek's not going around molesting people,
right.
But shutting down other women of color's voices, you know, it's kind of ironic in a way that things are so complicated, and I just wonder, I hope that Selma Hayek has sort of learned from that experience. I don't know if she ever did, but I remember reading about it and being like, Selma, come on, you of all people should know that it's more difficult. It usually is more difficult for a woman of color like mm-hmm. yourself.
Yeah. It's that totally baffled me. I was just like, but you did. ten months ago. And then, like, also that Friday, Mira Sorvino had that a tweet about how the Weinstein brothers essentially ostracized Ashley Judd and Mira Sorvino to be on in Peter Jackson's Hobbit movies, either The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings. They were up; they were being considered for two prominent roles. I don't know which roles, but they but Weinstein basically just kind of told Peter Jackson that they were hard to work with, and they kind of got they basically got blackballed.
Oh, I missed that. I believe it.
Yeah. So she says Mira Sorvino. So there's a tweet from Rebecca Falconer of I believe this is Stuff, a website called Stuff in New Zealand. I guess it's a New Zealand-based website. The Weinstein brothers orchestrated a smear campaign that led Peter Jackson to blacklist Ashley Judd and Mira Sorvino. The Hobbit director tells NZ Stuff. And Mira Sorvino quotes the tweet, and she wrote, "Just seeing this after I awoke, I burst out crying. There it is, confirmation that Harvey Weinstein derailed my career, something I suspected but was unsure. Thank you, Peter Jackson, for being honest. I'm just heartsick." And it was just like, damn, like, the power that this guy had, it's crazy. Like, all this stuff is coming out. Like, we knew, I think we had an idea of how powerful he was, but to this extent, it's just, it's when you actually have proof of it, it's pretty, it's disheartening.
Yeah.
It's sad. Okay.
So, it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing else you could say, but it's always refreshing to get a woman's take on this, because like I told you before, I just have my nerd guy friends, and we talk about these movies, and it's always a warm, it's always cool to have a lady involved without not trying to be creepy about it, but just always get a female perspective. So let's move right along into what you're here for, to talk about The Disaster Artist, and we'll just get right into it. I'll read the little blurb from that Google provides, and we'll see where we go. We see where we get from there. Okay. With The Disaster Artist, James Franco transformed the tragic comic true story of an aspiring filmmaker and infamous Hollywood outsider, Tommy Wiseau, an artist whose passion was as sincere as his methods were questionable, into a celebration of friendship, artistic expression, and dreams pursued against insurmountable odds. Based on Greg Sestero best-selling tell-all about the McCheese. I don't really like this blurb. It's not that great. But basically, it's a movie about the making of Tommy Wiseau's 2003 film called The Room. And The Room is basically about a successful banker's fiance that tempts and manipulates his best friend. So I guess the best way to start this out is, have you seen The Room before?
I have not.
Wow, you have not. Okay.
Yeah.
You're not missing much, and I don't think it's I don't think you have to see it based on. It would be interesting to see it to get your take on it. I saw it maybe like 8 or 9 years ago, where it was just like this big phenomenon. I guess like this is I don't know if it's our generation's Rocky Horror Picture Show, but is Rocky Horror Picture Show like loved more than that's like a universally loved film, right?
I think it is. I think Rocky Horror is considered less of a bad, like, right, truly bad movie, and just like a sort of kitschy cult, right, classic.
Uh-huh.
And my sense is that like the Room is so bad that it's good, mm-hmm, in part because of the earnestness of Tommy Wiseau, and yeah, the fact like it wasn't like he was intending to make a really good movie and he just could not. But the earnestness is what makes him so endearing, what makes the movie so endearing.
But I
have to say, like, the movie The Disaster Artist made me want to watch the original. Mm-hmm. And I plan to. I just haven't gotten a chance to, because it's I feel like I'm too old now to try and go to a midnight screening. I'm just going to fall asleep. But I want to get.
You're not as old as I am, I don't think. And
I fall asleep at movies all the time, though. So, I'm like.
Okay, so I don't feel so bad then. Okay. I don't feel bad for falling asleep in Star Wars. Okay.
Yeah. So I had not seen The Room. I actually, for Slate, myself and my colleague, Jeffrey Bloomer, neither of us had seen The Room. So we did a back and forth chat about what it was like to watch the movie and not having seen it. And, you know, I think the whole point was to tell people that, like, you don't have to have seen The Room to really enjoy this movie.
Right.
And we both really enjoyed it. So.
Cool. So what are your thoughts on it? Like, just as far as the Disaster Artist is concerned, what did you think overall of the film? And then I guess we'll break down the acting and whatnot.
I thought it was a really great, it was just funny. Mm-hmm. And I loved the fact that all these people, all these cameos from famous people, they don't seem gratuitous in a way. It seems like they just like really wanted to be in this movie because they have feelings about The Room. And I appreciated seeing like Zac Efron pop up randomly, playing one of the characters in The Room. Mm-hmm. And even Sarah Chalk was from, what do you call it? From, what was that show
Scrubs?
With? Scrubs, yes. She shows up in it, or am I? Because I'm not, it's weird. I'm looking at the cast list now and I don't see her listed, but she definitely was in it for like a scene.
I don't remember seeing her.
Unless I'm confusing her with a different.
You know
I could
what?
Be.
You're probably thinking of the woman that was on the Showtime show. I'm dying up here. What the heck? Because she played the one that he was hooking up with, the fiance. Are you thinking about her?
No.
Okay.
Not Allison. I must have. You can scratch that part out.
Okay.
I think I actually got it wrong. She must not be in the movie.
You thinking about Ari Grainer?
Maybe
they kind of favor each other.
She's blonde, and she was like only in one scene, and she played like I don't even think it was established.
Okay.
Exactly who she was. She was somewhat on set, anyway. You can cut that part out. But I love seeing all the cameos and even Megan Mullally as
the mom,
his mom, as Dave Franco's character's mom. Mm-hmm. And it was just watching. It was the type of movie where I was watching and I was like, I can't believe this happened. And like, I'm sure some of it was dramatized or whatever, but like the fact that they let this go on when it was so clear he didn't know anything about making movies and they were filming scenes and it just like domino effect one thing after another where it would just get worse and worse and worse. And yet somehow no one thought to say like, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Mm-hmm. So watching that happen was just really entertaining and fun to watch. And James Franco was at his best. I think it's like the best use of his weirdness and his weirdness.
Yeah. I think he's essentially the glue that holds everything together. And the fact that he did it's based on the book. But anyway, as directing and starring in the film, I think because this film could have gone in the way of like just making fun of Tommy Wiseau, and the thing I appreciated about it the most was his earnestness, as you mentioned, as far as Wiseau's like the real Tommy Wiseau, the earnestness. I felt for this character, like I wanted it to go well for him, even though I knew it wasn't. It's something that's endearing in James Franco that's kind of hard for him because he's a good looking guy, and to have you to have because he does really good character stuff in a lot of his work. Like he's a character actor in a leading man's body, And I don't know how you feel about that, but I just feel like it, the choices that he makes, I still feel like his role as Alien in Spring Breakers should have at least, should have at least gotten him a BET nomination.
I don't know about
that. I'm messing with it. It's just a joke. Don't take me to task on that. But that's just a joke I've had for like 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like, it's just the choices that he makes, and this one, because it could have easily been he's a caricature of Tommy Wiseau, because it seemed like in a lot of the interviews and the press that I've watched and listened to, it's like, yeah, he'll go into Tommy being Tommy and people will laugh, but this actual portrayal is it's kind of a heartwarming, beautiful thing, and it's a little weird, and you kind of feel for him. There's a little bit of, like, I don't know, what would you say? Is there a little homoeroticism between him and Greg?
I didn't really get that sense.
You did?
No.
Not when maybe he went out, when he started to get a girlfriend, when Greg got a girl? He got mad?
I do wonder if it's just the fact that there, I know in real life that these two were brothers. So, like, I was like, I wasn't thinking that they would do, I mean, it's James Franco, so he'll do lots of things. but I guess the fact that they're brothers in real life, I wasn't really picking up on that vibe.
Okay.
I think more so, it just seems like, I guess there was sort of a single white female sort of thing going on there. Where it's okay. Like, who is this person you're bringing in? But no, I got more of a sense of just like, well, to be honest, because I knew so little about the room, I still, like, from watching the movie, I get no sense of like what the actual plot of the, if there is a plot, I heard there's not really a plot of the room. And I also like didn't really know anything about Tommy Wiseau. To be honest, I think the first time I even like really knew, for some reason, I went so long without knowing about the room until Room came out. Remember Room from like 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
The Larson movie?
The Brie Larson movie. Yeah. She won the Oscar for, where she's like trapped in the room for a good like third of the movie.
Yeah.
Because I remember people making jokes about and confusing Room with The Room, and I was like, what is The Room? Like, that was the first time I think I'd ever even heard of The Room. I don't remember them ever showing it in my college as like a midnight screening. Rocky Horror, yes, not The Room. But I think that to me it was more so their characters, it just seemed like he was really, really into making this movie and doing whatever it took. And he saw, because Greg, played by Dave Franco, was so in awe of him at first, like he latched on to that. I guess I also, because I didn't really know about Tommy Wiseau, at first I thought like, wait, is he slow? Does he have a speech? Impediment? I couldn't tell if he was supposed to be like, you know, there were some mental issues going on there, but it seems more so like, well, now we know he's not American. So it's just like sort of broken English. Like he doesn't really speak
like the Eastern European vibe, but he says he's from Louisiana. He says, I'm all
right.
American boy, you know?
Right. But that's probably says more about me than it does about him. Like, I don't want to imply that, you know, someone having mental issues is the same as someone speaking in a different language. That's not what I would imply at all.
No. We're not. No, I don't think anybody's going to think that.
I'm terrible with accents in general. Like, I'm terrible at telling where people are from for the most part. So
yeah.
I was confused for part of it. I was like, I don't. What's going on here? You know, the vibe I kind of got, I think at first, is sort of like a Lenny and I forget the other character's name, and Of Mice and Men.
Okay, yeah.
Sort of, but that's probably, I haven't read that book since high school, so maybe I'm really off, but yeah.
But those are, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just thinking, like, those are some of the things you asked, because even, I think Terry Gross asked James Franco in his, you know, research, did he find that maybe Tommy was he on the spectrum?
Right.
And what, you know, and the thing is where it's just, he would just sort of say his background, his origin story. He says he's from Louisiana although he has this Eastern European accent, and there's a mystery to how he got his millions of dollars. Put $6 million into the film. He put it out for 2 weeks so it could be considered for Oscar. You know, it's totally funded by himself, and so it could be in contention for Oscars and whatnot. So I don't think it's not an invalid thing, because that's what I wonder. You know, I've worked with children who've been on various parts of the spectrum, and you know, maybe he wasn't. And you know, we had another film, Roman Israel, which was just came out not last month, with Denzel playing a character that was on the spectrum. And you know, I thought it was the more that I think about this film, I think it's a pretty masterful performance from Franco, because it could have easily been that caricature, but he won me over in that diner scene when they go to that restaurant for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, what is, like, because this could be really weird, because you just see him saying, like, doing Stanley Kowalski in Streetcar Named Desire, Stella, like he's doing that. Like, and I was, for the listeners, I was in that play. I played Stanley in college. That was pretty amazing, but I got like a little whatever, but nobody cares. But I did that show in college. That's a pretty hard scene. But he's doing that, and everybody else is just like, man, like, this guy is off his rocker. He's crazy. But then at the same time, Greg looks at that and is like, how can I be that uninhibited? How do I get there? And he takes them out. They're eating lunch. And it's like, it's a really sweet scene. It was like, don't worry about all these other people. It's you and me. We're doing this. And it was just like, all right, now I'm on board for this. Because I didn't know what to expect. It was just like, okay, we're going to make fun of a weird guy for an hour and a half, you know? But it just seemed like and that made it more compelling. And then obviously it was weird. But I don't know, in my older age, if I'm getting a little too sappy when it comes to certain things. Because this has been like the second or third review where the other person talking about the movie with me has been like, oh, I thought it was really funny. And I'm like, well, I kind of felt sad. You know, so I think it's just a testament to his performance.
I think there was also very heartfelt moments as well. But those weren't the moments that stood out to me.
Oh, no. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
What about the scene where I guess maybe the sequence where where Greg meets Bryan Cranston, who's at the time doing Malcolm in the Middle, where it's like you might actually have a chance to be a part of something, and then it's just like he just shuts it down. Like, what do you think? What do you think about Greg? What do you think about Greg in that moment? Is he being loyal? How did you feel about that?
I mean, I think obviously, based on the way the movie ends, we're supposed to sort of commend him for having stuck around. But I mean, I think that was just it. Well, as far as I know, I think that I read a little bit about it afterwards. I don't think that actually happened in real life. Like, he wasn't offered a role in Malcolm in the Middle. I think there might have been some other conflict of some sort that was similar to that, but it wasn't exactly that. But I do think that, you know, that was dumb. He should have done it. Yeah. But I think Greg obviously was still very much attached to Tommy, even though he knew this wasn't exactly the most healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a good way to show how reach that point where their relationship really breaks down and get to the point they need to by the end. The end, I thought, felt a little too neatly tied up. It clearly didn't happen that way either. The fact that, like, all the people who we had tortured so long on set were in the audience and then just started laughing. Like, it reminded me of the scene from Sullivan's Travels, where I forget, the lead character walks in on like all these men who I think they were, I can't remember if they were in prison or if they were all, it's been so long since I've seen it, or if they're all like just people working on the chain gang or whatever. Okay. But they're all just laughing at this cartoon together. And it's just one of the most joyful moments of like seeing all these people and like enjoy this moment on screen. And it speaks to the coming together nature of movie making. And I think that's what the Disaster Artist is trying to portray, is how like it's a love of movies in a way, not just the Disaster Artist, but of movie making and of people who set out to create something that people can enjoy. And so I thought it was a little like the fact that it all happens, like The Room did not become an overnight sensation at all. And I imagine people probably would have walked out of that screening. So it felt a little too tidy. But at the same time, I can appreciate the sentiment, even if I don't think it was necessarily the best move to make. I can appreciate the fact that they wanted to show, like, this is what movie making can do. It can bring people together, even in the worst of times. Which would have been the creation of The Room.
Yeah, now that you mentioned that, I mean, I agree with you. I think it also kind of reminds me, I've never seen Sullivan's Travels. Is this the 1941 drama romance movie?
Yeah, yes. It's really good. Okay. It's been so long since I've seen it, but I really love that movie. And that's like comes towards the end of the film, and okay, it's just a really warm moment, and that's sort of what this reminded me of.
Got you. The community aspect makes me think of Waiting for Guffman, the Christopher Guest movie. Have you
seen
that?
Yeah.
Except that they thought it was a big deal, and then the community did actually like it, but they were expecting more from it, like for it to go to Broadway, and it did kind of get sad towards the end, but the pursuit was in earnestness. So I thought it was a good movie. I liked it. How do you think this one's going to do during award season? Well, first of all, let's talk about, are there any things that you didn't care for in the film that you thought were, you mentioned like you don't think it actually turned out the way it did, but was there anything else that you?
No, I mean, I think that was the biggest issue. Okay. I've heard that, again, I haven't seen The Room, but you get the sense that there's a little, something about The Room is sort of misogynistic in a way.
Yes, definitely.
And so the fact that it doesn't really dive into that, I guess, is probably another thing that I would have liked to see happen. But yeah, other than that, I just really, really enjoyed the movie, and I want to see it again because I just think it's really, really fascinating to watch.
You should also play the video game too.
There's a video game?
Yeah, there's like this 8-bit.
Oh god.
There's this 8-bit video game where you play Tommy, and you.
Oh god. Okay.
it's pretty funny. Like I think you can, if you look it up, it's still out there. I remember playing it years ago, and it's pretty ridiculous.
Okay.
How do you think this will fare during award season?
I mean, I think James Franco is very likely to get a nomination.
Mm-hmm.
He's so far in the critics' circles, and I think with SAG, he also got a nomination for
Best Actor. Comedy.
So, yeah. Okay. So I can see that definitely happening. I think the Best Picture race is still very wide open.
You got any early predictions? I might want to have you back though. But in any early predictions you got?
For just the Oscars?
Yeah. Oscars. What do you think? Best Picture, Best Actor? Your thoughts on how you feel?
I think we've already talked about this. I do think Get Out has a good chance of getting nominated.
Mm-hmm.
I think also Dunkirk as well will definitely at least rack up a ton of technical awards.
Yeah.
I can see Peele getting in for screenplay for Get Out. Mm-hmm. Definitely Laurie Metcalf for Best Supporting. Jessica Chastain for Molly's Game.
Ooh, over Frances.
I'm not talking about winning. I'm just talking about nominations.
Oh, like, okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel like that's just it's way too soon to tell at this point. Okay. But yeah, for I think it'll probably be a tight race between McDormand and Chastain. Or actually Meryl Streep.
Well, she gets that obligatory. Now, did she crush it, or was it just like Meryl Streep is good in it, but does she really deserve a nomination?
I can't tell anymore, to be honest. Like, I'm going the fact that she was nominated for Florence Foster Jenkins, I think she is by far one of the greatest actors, male or female, mm-hmm. who is living now.
Sure.
But I do feel like we're at the point now where she just gets nominated because she's Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
And I think she's really, really, she's really great in The Post, but is she better than she was in, like, I don't know, The Devil Wears Prada? I don't know. I thought she's brilliant in The Devil Wears Prada. Meryl Streep's going to get that obligatory nomination.
Right.
Tom Hanks will probably get nominated as well. Spielberg will get nominated for director. I'm hoping Roger Deakins pulls a win for what do you call it? Cinematography for Blade Runner. Oh. To me, that was like the only the best part of Blade Runner was the cinematography. And he's never won. He's been nominated like a dozen times at least and has never won. So maybe he'll pull out with this.
Yeah.
We'll see. Those are my predictions for now.
Sure. This is some pretty good ones. I'm super excited about Molly's Game. I've not seen that. And then I, Tanya, I really want to see.
I, Tanya is so fun. I really liked I, Tanya.
Okay.
Also really good. I really enjoyed it.
Now, how does that film play for you? Because to me, when I saw the trailer, I got Drop Dead Gorgeous vibes from it. And then I got kind of nervous because it's like, okay, are they going to give her love because it's kind of a comedy? Or is it, what's your take on that film?
I mean, I'm not the first person to say this, but it's totally like Goodfellas. It's got a very Goodfellas vibe to it.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to put it in on the same pedestal as Goodfellas. Don't get me wrong. Goodfellas is like one of my all-time favorites. But in terms of like the style of filmmaking, the way it tells the stories, there's different people narrating the story at any given point. And you know how in Goodfellas there are times when you're in the middle of the scene and then the narration switches from voiceover to them in that moment turning to the camera, you know, direct address and also commenting on what's happening. It has that vibe. It's very like snappy in that way. But yeah, I really, it's a very fun, entertaining movie. And as someone who remembers that period of Tanya Harding, I mean, I was like six, but like that was back when all the girls that I knew were obsessed with figure skating. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, I don't remember any of the details. So having that colored in was very interesting to watch. But yeah, I love it. It's good.
That's great. That's great to hear. Cause I'm super excited to see that one. And I think Margot Robbie will definitely get a nom again. Like it's just that category, the categories for women are so top heavy. I say it's like the Western Conference in the NBA. Like it's so many good teams, so many good players, and it's going to be fun to see how it works out. Well, Aisha, this has been awesome. I got to have you back again. I'm going to bother you again for your thoughts on stuff. You have to be.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be my God, that's kind of shit. No, it's not shitty, but it's like you're good at what you do. So, but I don't want you to be like, oh, you're the woman that I talk to.
I hope you have some other women on.
I'm actually talking to a terrific comic, Leah Bonema. We're gonna chat about The Last Jedi, because I know she really digs that, and so I talked to her about that. But it's always good to have. It's not like I don't have women on my show, but it's always refreshing to get a perspective on you know what's been going on the past few months and then your take on movies, whether you're a dude or a lady. You just have I like your thoughts. So talk about the cool stuff that you're doing in your podcast. Plug your stuff.
Yes, and we'll have to get you on Represent as well soon.
I'm gonna have some credits that you can actually say this that I'm not like a random guy. That's because the stuff that I've done, it's going to come out next year. So, okay, cool. We'll have stuff to talk about.
Yeah. I'm going to Sundance in next month. We're awesome. Doing, Represent is actually doing We're doing a show with the Culture Gab Fest. So everyone should check that out while we're there. It's January 23rd. And yeah, so we'll be doing that. If some of your folks are fans of Lady Bird, we have a great interview with Greta Gerwig from a couple weeks ago.
It's really good. You asked a lot of questions that I would have liked to ask her. It was just like, because it wasn't just like a run of the mill. It was like, where did you were from Sacramento? Is this your biography? You asked some really good questions, and you made her talk about things that she hasn't talked about in a lot of pressers. So it was really good.
Thanks. Yeah. That's pretty much it. And our year end episode is coming out next week. So everyone should check that out. And yeah, that's what we've got going on right now.
Aisha Harris, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.